It'll be first and 25.
This is First and 25, the Football Zebras podcast, our 25-minute roundtable discussion on officiating. This week, it's the championship edition and the all-star crew from Football Zebras, myself, Ben Ostro, Mark Schultz, Cam Philippe, Chris Soibert, and Pat Weber. So let's jump right in with a few quick takes from the NFC and AFC championship games. And I'll start with you, Chris.
Well, Reek Woolen was probably the happiest person at the end of the Seattle game when they ended up winning because he took an absolutely terrible taunting call midway there through the, I believe it was the third quarter, where for some reason he felt the need to go and engage the entire Rams bench. Line judge Kent Payne was there. He was monitoring the situation quite trying to be hands-off, but he was certainly trying to get Woolen out of there. Did not want him to get a foul, but Woolen just kind of sat there and went almost into the Rams bench and deservedly got a flag for that. And the amusing thing is that, you know, professional sort of taunter Mike Florio put an article out today about, you know, that taunting is not consistently called in the NFL. And I would argue that they do a really good job calling taunting for the most part. They give players the opportunity to celebrate, but you cannot go into the bench of the opposing team and basically take on the entire team. And that's what he ended up doing. And that's why he got a flag deservedly. And he apologized to his team after the game, rightly so. But in the end, you have to keep that from occurring, because if you let that go and then the Rams retaliate, then you have something on the other side that you have to deal with and all hell can break loose. So good job for Payne for getting it. It's a flag I'm sure he didn't want to throw, but he needed to throw it in that case.
And then what you say is then the Rams player that in their hypothetical winds up getting the flag and he's like, you know, this pot was stirred and there was no flag on that side. So understand with the the flag coming out and really trying to make sure, because you're putting them 1 foot out of the game if they pick up a second one. And I think we also saw another situation in that game where I believe it was after a sack, but there was some defensive celebrating, but it was not in the face of the opponent, and there's a very, very clear line on that. Maybe Florio's got one towards the ejection for his taunting, but we'll go on and take a look at what Cam has for this week.
Yep, staying in the same game in Seattle, going right to the end of the game, actually, with 10 seconds left. The Rams are in desperation mode, down 4, need a touchdown to win to advance to the Super Bowl. Now, just like everyone else was on the edge of their seat, and Matthew Stafford was able to rifle off a deep pass, 20-yard pass to the sideline to Puka Nacua, and caught it right at the sideline, as close as you could be. And a lot of things are going through the mind of an official on a play like this. You know, if pass low to the ground, is it going to be ruled a catch, ruled a trap? That's the first thing. And the second thing, probably even more importantly, because of the situation, is that runner contacted inbounds and is down by contact inbounds, or was he able to get out of bounds first? There would have been about 3 seconds left on the clock if Nacua had gotten out of bounds, but down judge David Oliver came in confidently, strongly with the wind signal saying that he was tackled inbounds. And I got to be honest, when I saw it live, I was like, wow, that was really close. I need to see that again. And they showed it, and Nakua's left shin came down after contact, right at the hashes, right on the ticks along the sideline. And, you know, in a game where it seemed as though, I should say, in an afternoon of football where it seemed as though officiating really wasn't in the spotlight, which is a wonderful thing. I had made a comment at one point during, probably late in the second, excuse me, yeah, late in the second quarter, maybe early the third, I said, wow, I've never seen a playoff game with on a quieter officiating front ever before. And then, you know, stuff started to happen. We had the taunting and everything. So, you know, Murphy's Law. At the end of the day, though, at the end of the day, though, they needed to figure this out at the end, because, you know, in a play that's so critical, we want to make sure it's correct. And I remembered noting during the game they had panned out to show the Seahawks celebrating, and back judge Jonah Monroe was killing the clock in a way to kind of indicate, you know, they're going to take a look at this. And there ended up being an expedited review. We're under 2 minutes just to make sure that he was tackled in bounds. He was. Clay Martin clicked on the mic and said, "We're just confirming that the runner was tackled inbounds. The game is now over." And he even added the soundbite, "Seahawks win." So major, major, major props to David Oliver getting that inbounds correctly, real time. That's why these officials are getting these high level games. And it was really something to see when the pressure's on, he stepped up to the plate.
And that started before that snap. So we had a spike to kill the clock. Then, then the Rams were in formation, and then there was a timeout to assess by the Seahawks. Now you're going in, and all your wings are, you know, particularly the ones that are on the sidelines, they're going through extra things. So just kind of run us through that. What happened before the snap?
Sure. So when you're in that situation, obviously you want to go through your pre-snap routine. But you're going to think about this, you're going to get some deep help if he wants to go deep downfield. And at the end of the day, you know, we're maintaining our keys just as it's any other play. And, you know, once we get that play coming into our zone, just like I had, you know, previously said, you got to make sure that we have the catch. And then right at the sideline, we got to make sure if he's in or out. Again, obviously, we're going to treat this like any other play and do our pre-snap routine and everything like that. But looming large, obviously, are the clock implications. So it's got to be forefront in your brain that if this pass is coming to your sideline, you've got to take a snapshot in your mind. You have to make decisions in 1/26th of a second. That's what Mike Pereira always said, a quote of his. And in a situation like that, you have to take that snapshot at the sideline to really determine, did he get out? If he's trying to get out, are we going to give it to him? But if the defender makes a good play and keeps him in bounds and gets him down there, then we got to give the defender the props as well. So at the end of the day, we got to make sure that we're keying on that, especially when we're under 10 seconds, not even a minute or 2 minutes. We're down to 10 seconds in the NFC Championship. It doesn't get bigger than that.
I saw great officiating this championship weekend. There was only one, what I call, pull the covers over your head moment. And that was in Denver. Jarrett Stidham wanted to dump a pass out because he was going to take a sack, and it went out to the side. And first of all, Alex Kemp had to rule, is it a pass or a fumble? And he ruled it was a pass. That's fine. He then ruled that it was a forward pass as the ball was rolling on the ground. The Patriots picked it up. Then he blew the whistle and signaled incomplete pass, killing the play. Well, they went back to, and it was going to be intentional grounding and on Stidham, and Denver was going to still have the ball. And the Patriots are standing in the end zone thinking they just got a scoop and score. So replay comes in, and they overruled Kemp, saying that it was actually a backward pass. However, the Patriots had secured possession, so the Patriots got the ball at the spot of the blown whistle. Patriots scored a touchdown 2 plays later, so it all came out in the wash, and Kemp owned the play afterwards. So it all came out okay. I'm sure Kemp is chastising himself a little bit. And it's a reminder that when you have replay, replay can always turn a touchdown into he's down, or he's out of bounds, or he's incomplete. Very rarely, if ever, can replay turn a he's down, he's out of bounds into a touchdown because of the whistle factor.
And in this case, it was a situation where we always hear that if there is an either or call, always go towards the one that keeps the play live, unless you're sure and you have the one that says, oh no, it's a dead ball, we can call it definitive. Don't punt it up to replay every time. Call it if you can, but if it's still kind of gray, let the play run out. And unfortunately, he did make that either or. And as I pointed out on the live blog, this was a either or also, because it was not only pass fumble, but forward pass, backward pass. And that was the extra complication that kind of got off of the mantra of where you let the play go unless you have a definitive call. And he did have something that was definitive, but there was an extra added wrinkle there. Pat, I think we're going to stay in the same game there and a little earlier. And tell me what you saw.
Yeah, after an illegal touching foul when Broncos quarterback Jared Stidham threw a pass to the running back along the sideline, there were some questions that came out of what makes it different between like when a lineman catches the ball and how one receives. And that, in the instance in the game, it was a 0-yard penalty versus when a lineman catches the ball, it's a 5-yard penalty. The biggest distinction, obviously, is whether it's an eligible receiver who's committing the foul or an originally ineligible player. Basically, this rule changed from a few years ago, and NCAA has since also made the same rules change, where we don't want to penalize a receiver for accidentally stepping out of bounds, running their route, and essentially the foul is to make it just an incomplete pass is kind of the purpose of it, versus when a lineman is catching a ball, which is what they're never supposed to do anyways. So that's going to have a little bit more of a penalty to it. Also, to have a foul from along the sidelines, they have to reestablish inbounds. If they are jumping like in the air from inbounds, from out of bounds to inbounds, then they're still out of bounds. So if they touch the ball, that would make the pass incomplete. So the foul is essentially just making it an incomplete pass. There are some rare plays where the defense might decline the foul if the pass, you know, would get deflected by a receiver who would establish inbounds and gets intercepted, or maybe they catch the ball and later fumble it. They can still decline the foul, but usually we're just making that an incomplete pass.
And I believe it was around 2000, 2001, thereabouts. I'm not sure the exact year that they made the change, but it used to be, at least in the NFL, it was a dead ball as soon as it was touched by an ineligible or a player that was eligible became ineligible by virtue of stepping out of bounds. And it didn't make a lot of sense to kill a live play because of a foul, essentially, because it could offset or anything of that nature. Or, as you said, it could be declined if the defense winds up with a better outcome. And so then we also had, and I have a sense that Cam's going to swoop in and correct me if I get this wrong, because he always has all these little dates down. But I believe it was Brent Celek in a playoff game for the Eagles that caught a pass in on a 2-point conversion, and he stepped on the end line and then reestablished, caught the pass, and at that particular time, 5 yards and repeat the down. So now, because it's a loss of down, that 2-point conversion will fail. But in that playoff game, Eagles got a second chance at that 2-point conversion. I'm gonna go out on a limb and say that was 2015 or 2014, because I believe the rule change then came in at 2016.
You gave me the swoop in opportunity, so here it is. It was actually 2010. I know that because it was a Pete Morelli game, and it was in the very early stages of Mike Pereira on Fox, who came in and said, you know, they're actually going to get another chance. When they initially said foul on the offense, try is unsuccessful, they ended up bringing it back and saying in order to enforce that properly, they would need to try again. So that was 2010. Pete Morelli was the referee. Wild card game, Green Bay and Philadelphia.
And so we have widely established the fact that when it comes to pinning down a season, as long as I'm in the decade, I get it right, because everything just blurs together at a certain age. But I'll know when it's in the 80s or the 90s or something like that. But at least I have someone there to proofread my seasons there. One last thing, which was a piece of bookkeeping in the on the Patriots side that Alex Kemp and Barry Anderson were on top of. There was a lot of substitutions which involved ineligible linemen lining up in fullback positions and lining up as ends. And yes, the fullback is an eligible receiver. So if you don't have the eligible number, you must report to the referee prior to the down. So it's treated just the same as a tackle eligible that's on the end of the line. So in this case, we had a little, when we're getting into that short yardage situation, there were timeouts, there were replays called for. So the reporting happened. We had an announcement that you know, that there was an eligible reporting or two ineligibles reporting in some cases. Then when the timeout intervenes, that buys them out and that kind of wipes that out. So it was on top, Alex Kemp was on top of making sure that that was reestablished. Hey, you are out. Are you back in as eligible or ineligible? What's going on here? And when we have an administrative stoppage, so when the clock, when the play clock is at 25 seconds, that's more of a convenience so that we don't have to run the full 40. But that also means when you're coming out of that administrative stoppage, you want to have everything done. All the substitutions are done. Any of this little administrative stuff with eligibles and things like that, clear all that out, get a clean restart at 25 when it's ready for play. And so we had Barry Anderson hovering over the ball, Alex Kemp reaffirming that, yes, their eligibles are still reporting for this down. And it happened a bunch of times that replay came in, and so that a replay will also reset the eligibility for them. So all of this going in and out, it's very easy to lose track of that. And they were on top of it, and it was not really seen very much because of all the other things that were going on. So I wanted to tip my cap to Alex Kemp, keeping all of that in the back of his mind. And so we came into the championship Sunday with two referees that have not been at the championship game, have not been a white hat for a championship game. So it's a little bit of a changing of the guard. Performance is a big thing that we've noted in the regime of Ramon George, now ending his second full season as the vice president of officiating. So we can tell right off the bat, there's more accountability. There's no gift assignments for anyone. We see some officials that raise an eyebrow to us, no assignment or just an alternate assignment. We have some that are getting three assignments. So I'm going to throw this out to the crew here. You know, it's a whole new world in playoff officiating here. And you can't just, you know, rest on your name. You got to step up in the regular season to earn your spot.
Yeah. And I mean, I think the biggest name that we all see was omitted from the playoffs was Bill Vinovich. And I put that in my sort of, you know, predictions where I kind of said, I had him in the divisional round, I believe. And I said, well, he's Bill Vinovich. He's going to get a divisional round because that's who he is. And that's, I think, you know, glaring issue number one of his name is up there in the, you know, in the pantheon of good officials, but clearly Ramon George and the graders this year felt he did not have a good enough year to get a playoff assignment. And, you know, I think from a public point of view, that sort of transparency and that sort of honesty with your officials is all fans look for, right? They want accountability. And that sort of accountability comes into playoff assignments. And that was the biggest glaring one for me.
This isn't the first time a lot of officials have gotten nothing that are playoff eligible. In Al Riveron's tenure, in 3 years, there were between 23 and 25 officials that did not receive an on-field assignment or an alternate. Now, when Walt Anderson came aboard, the number of officials not receiving an on-field or alternate assignment were in the single digits. And now it's a jolt because we're in the mid-teens again with Ramon George. So again, the accountability is there. I do not think we're ever going to get a situation where officials are regularly kicked out of playoffs because of one bad call in the season. He's going to take the whole season with all the data. But again, yes, there's no gift assignments. Two retiring officials did not receive an on-field assignment or alternate this year. So you're not going to get an alternate Super Bowl assignment in your retiring year, no matter if you don't grade out it well enough.
Yeah, I think just echoing your guys' sentiments, it's very clear that you need to perform on the field to get an assignment. And that's, I don't think anyone can disagree with that. And the guys who are in the playoffs have earned it. And the guys who missed it, they know they have some things to work on going into next year.
So as Mark mentioned, there were 19 officials that did not get either an assignment on field or an alternate assignment. Two of those, as you said, were retiring. So of that 19, we're now down to 17. Two of them are second-year officials. Two of them were alternates last season and haven't been on the field in about 5 years. And six of them have had consecutive seasons where they've been shut out. So when you start adding up numbers like that, and when you saw that there was no favors given to anyone last year in the offseason, there were three officials that were dismissed. Some of the sources were saying that maybe they would have gone a little bit more, but you know, in the first year of Ramon George's tenure, he didn't go as far. Maybe that's one of the things that's out there. So, is there going to be a sizable turnover specifically on performance? So you have four people who have already filed for retirement as it is, and then some of these officials, and a lot of them, not a lot of tread on the tire either. You know, there's no need to name out names, but, you know, we'll see in the offseason if there is some accountability, if some are headed back to some of the college conferences, which, as we saw, a lot of NFL officials that just don't make it, they go back to college and they thrive. And so it's just that it's a different game. It's not that they're a bad official. It's just a completely different game. On the flip side, we kind of hit on some of the negative points, but there are some positives that did come out of that. You have ones that did get assignments earlier than we usually see them, going by past criteria. Some that got triple assignments, particularly at side judge, and some of the deep wings there, field judge as well. So anything that stood out from that group as well?
So the first one that I think really popped out to us was when we saw Alan Baines get assigned to work in the divisional round after he had just gotten a wild card assignment. And I know we spoke last week about how he had worked with his brother in that game in the divisional round. So not this past weekend, but the weekend before. So much so we thought it was an error in the list we had received. Generally, you'll see when we see two on-field assignments, it's going to be a divisional playoff and a Super Bowl. That's kind of been the standard for the last, you know, 15 or so years. But in addition to that, we also saw side judge James Coleman, who worked in Denver this past weekend. He had been on field for a wild card as well. So again, it all speaks to the accountability. It speaks to the mantra of just putting the best officials out there. No need to get lost in the weeds of the, you know, this many, you need to have this many years, and the really long drawn out postseason rule assignments we've been posting for years. You can throw all those in the trash, and at the end of the day, the best people are going to be on the field, which is, I'm sure, what the league wants and what the fans want as well.
If Ramon George thinks you're up to the game, he'll assign it to you.
So of those, we saw Roy Ellison and Eugene Hall, who are, you know, worked the divisional, and they're going to have a Super Bowl assignment. They also picked up an additional alternate assignment. We also saw Carl Johnson, Sean Petty, Jabir Walker, Boris Cheek, who's retiring, and Anthony Jeffries, and Terry Killens all pick up two alternate assignments plus an on-field. So those triple assignments do mean something quite a bit. And in two cases, we have the side judge, Anthony Jeffries, eighth season, and every year he's eligible, the 7 years he was eligible for the postseason, he has at least one on-field assignment. Terry Killens has taken it a step further. He's in his seventh year, so he's had six eligible postseasons and at least two assignments each and every season he's been in the NFL. So he's had at least one of those were on the field every year, and he's always picked up an additional on-field assignment or alternate assignment. So he's doing two games per year in the postseason, and you know, so 6 year streak going strong for him. So he's one of the hard performers and came out of the gate really hard and earned his Super Bowl assignment early, and is showing lots of levels of success year after year. And you know, so it's going to be a quite a competition for the umpire position in the Super Bowl for years to come. And with that, that's another episode of the First and 25 podcast. We're running towards the end of the season here, but you can catch up on anything that we covered during the season on your favorite podcasting app. 25 minutes fits right in your lunch break. We'd love to like talk officiating and get you through the week that way. I'm Ben Ostro for Camp Philippe. Chris Soibert, Mark Schultz, and Pat Weber. We'll see you next time.